Being optimistic is an asset. Being realistic, that's just as important. Without both, you wind up sort of like being that kid digging through a pile of horse manure, certain there's a pony in there somewhere. That idea can be applied to the special House seat election held this past week in Georgia. Democrats believe that their lead candidate would gain an easy win and demonstrate the strength of an anti-Trump wave in America. The results, they didn't quite work out that way, did they? Here with her analysis of this election is National Review columnist and National Review Institute William F. Buckley Fellow in Political Journalism, Alexandra DeSantis. Thanks for being here today, Alexandra.
Hi there.
And nationalreview.com is where you can read Alexandra's series of articles on this race, which was for Georgia District 6. And, well, give us let's work backwards. The current state of affairs in the aftermath, what did we wind up with?
So the situation right now is there are two candidates, a Democrat and a Republican, heading into a runoff election, which will be held on June 20th, and that is because neither candidate in the race reached 50% of the vote, and so they're going to face each other now.
And it's on the Republican side, former Georgia Secretary of State and Commissioner Karen Handel. And on the Democratic side, it seemed to be, I guess, his name is John Ossoff, but if you listen to all the panel discussions last weekend going into Tuesday, you might have nicknamed him the Trump Slayer, the way they were promoting this guy.
That's definitely the sense you would get. And leading up to this race, you know, Ossoff got a ton of support. I think the Democratic Party just kind of chose him as their standard bearer and then funneled just tons of money into this race. He raised over $8.3 million, mostly from outside of Georgia, and he was definitely the planned for savior.
Speaking of outside, I think about Mr. Ossoff. He could not vote for himself in this election, could he?
That's correct. He actually doesn't live inside Georgia 6. He lives down, supposedly, in his words, down the road with his girlfriend, and his parents are from the district.
You were down there. Did that fact with any Democrats you spoke with, did that fact bother any of them?
It didn't seem to. You know, most of the people that I spoke to who were voting for Ossoff were already very convinced that they wanted him, either because they didn't like Trump or just because they thought, you know, the Democratic Party represents progress and change, and they didn't. None of them really responded negatively to the fact that he didn't live in the district, but plenty of Republicans did mention that to me as a problem.
Now if you look at Georgia 6, it's not a Democratic district if you look at the heritage of it, and if you look at the presidential voting history of it in the recent elections, well, truth be told, it's not really a Trump district, is it?
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's been Republican, represented by Republicans since 1979. It was Newt Gingrich's district for his entire time in the House, and then following that, you know, John McCain and Mitt Romney both won the district by around 20 percentage points. So it's long been very Republican. But the reason people thought it might flip in this election is because in November, Trump won the district by only a little over 1 percentage point. So people were thinking perhaps it's swinging back in the other direction.
Yes, Marco Rubio, who had won the district by about 40% of the vote, and Trump came in 28%, margin of 14,000 votes. Did I hear correctly, too, that Republican nominee Karen Handel, by and large, separated herself from Trump?
I'm not sure. Separated might be a little bit strong, but she certainly didn't embrace Trump as much as some of her Republican competitors did. You know, this was a huge field. There were 18 candidates, 11 of whom were Republicans, and several of them sort of positioned themselves as very pro-Trump, you know, having campaigned for Trump candidates. Whereas Handel said, you know, he's the president, I'll work with him, but I'm not going to be an extension of the White House if I'm a member of Congress.
Now, if you look at the math, Ossoff got 92,390 votes. That's the 48.1% under the 50% that he needed to get the nod. Handel came in second with 19.8% of the vote in that heavily numbered candidate battle. She's starting off with 54,000 votes. Do you, based upon who you spoke with down there in Georgia 6, do you think the Republicans will come together to close that gap between the 54,000 that she had, 92,300 that Ossoff got, and put Handel over the top?
Yeah, I mean, given my experience there and just what I've learned about the district in the past month or two, I think that the Republicans will certainly rally around Karen Handel. Most of the voters I spoke with said they voted for their GOP candidate of choice because they thought they were the best one or whatever, but they were all solidly Republican, and it seems like they would certainly vote for any Republican that they could get. And on top of that, I think the other candidates were very quick to endorse Karen Handel. The other GOP candidates who lost and didn't make it into the runoff were quick to endorse Karen Handel and to encourage their followers to vote for her in the runoff. So I think that'll play a role as well.
All right, Alexander DeSantis from National Review, nationalreview.com, here on Issues and Ideas. I think, too, with Ossoff, he did gangbusters in early voting, and looks like the early voters were pretty much all the voters that he had.
Yeah, he did. When the returns were coming in on Tuesday night, he was up by a lot. I think he even made it up into the 70th percentile, somewhere around there, because so many of the early votes were for him. And I think that's a result of just the huge turnout drive, the grassroots push that he was trying to get underway in the district with all that money that he had made. But it sort of petered out around Election Day, and I'm not sure exactly why that is, but it definitely, that was the reason for not making it to 50%.
We spoke earlier about the GOP heritage of Georgia 6. According to the Cook PVI and 538.com, Georgia 6 was the most Democratic-leaning seat in Georgia held by a Republican. So with at least these initial results being with the R, still a wait and see what happens in June with the final election, the runoff election. But given the results that we saw this past Tuesday, if that's the most Democratic-leaning seat and that's the results that came of it in a state like Georgia, what message does that deliver to the Democratic Party?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a warning sign to them. It shows them that even with $8.3 million, you know, the most that's been raised in this type of election in history, and then they still couldn't pull off an outright win. That's definitely troubling, and it tells you that there's really not as much Democratic or even anti-Trump sentiment on the ground as they might hope.
Is going to be the thing to watch to see whether or not that's outside of the district cash flow happens again, or are those checkbooks going to look at what happened and say, well, once burned, twice shy?
Yeah, I think it's tough to say, but at this point, you know, people who are still very anti-Trump might continue pouring money into the district and hoping, you know, that this would look like a big anti-Trump victory for the Democrats early on. But other than that, I think some people might shy away given his Ossoff's lack of success in the first round.
How did Ossoff position himself? Is he a close to a Bernie Sanders type of radical liberal Democrat? Did he present himself as a centrist, much like we saw in Northwest New Jersey, where a moderate Democrat beat a long-term ultra-conservative for a House seat?
I think he's certainly trying to position himself much more in the middle. You know, I'm not sure where his actual loyalties lie. He was a Democratic staffer for a while. He's very young, only 30 years old, so he doesn't have much of a record really to speak of, but in his radio ads and television ads, he was always talking about, you know, lowering spending and things that are typically very Republican. And I think that's, you know, playing at the base of the district. He knows he's not going to win or even get close as a socialist Bernie Sanders type there.
Because I brought that question up only because it appears like the Democrats seem to want to go with the extreme candidates that will appeal to a New York or Los Angeles voter base, and they try to drop them in a Kansas City or an Atlanta region, and it's just not going to work out.
I think that's exactly right. You've hit the nail on the head there. It's just not going to work, and I think Democrats are making a strategic mistake when they go with candidates like that.
I want to follow along with this race and really all that is political and what is happening in D.C. and elsewhere in the world of politics and elections, because political season, I always wonder what perpetual motion is. I think we found in the world of campaigns and politics and money, and that's what Alexandra DeSantis writes about over at nationalreview.com. She's also a National Review Institute. William F. Buckley Fellow in Political Journalism, Alexandra DeSantis, thanks as always for being here today.
Yep, thank you.